Blog Talk Radio.
Detail the podcast on a Saturday night, November 9th, 2013. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We got NFL week number 10 coming up tomorrow. It's a Saturday night, and we get to do our picks. And Jason, we got off to a good start this week. We get on the board first with the Vikings and a dreadful game to watch over the Redskins.
Hey, a win's a win. Didn't look like it was going to be a win. Vikings, which I did not think possessed the ability to come back. Shanahan and the boys, they let him back into the game, and Adrian Peterson, as we correctly stated, was the man among boys out on the field. And not really a game we need to go too in-depth into, because neither one of those teams are going to amount to much of anything, but since we pick them all, we'll take a win. Yay us.
That's right. It counts just like all the others, like you said.
Right. It counts just as good as any stunning upset or you know, you only get 1 point. You can tear it yourself all day long for that big one upset that you got. But picking the Vikings over the Redskins on a Thursday night in Week 10 counts just the same.
If you want to hear us go into detail in depth on a subject, get the podcast subscription. Subscribe on iTunes in much less detail to podcast, because I got something to say on the Jonathan Martin situation. I gathered my thoughts, and those are going to be coming up after the half-hour live show, so you're going to want to tune in for that. We will start off with our three highlight games this week for Week 10. We'll start with the Lions and the Bears getting a rematch from Week 4 this season, when the Bears had started off 3-0 and everyone thought they were the real deal coming out of the gate hot, and they ran into the Detroit Lions, and it didn't go too well up in Motown for the Bears. And that was with Jay Cutler having his first bad game of the year. Now he's back from injury. It's a surprise. It's a miracle. Wait, he feels better. Jay Cutler, back from his groin injury, will get the start after the wonderful performance on Monday night from Josh McCown. It's a pick'em game. Detroit at Chicago, the line is pick'em. And Jason, what's your pick for this control of the NFC North?
Taking the Lions here. I think Jay Cutler is going to come back a little bit rusty. I think he might be feeling some footsteps coming from behind him. He's playing for a contract or playing for his future in Chicago or for another team. I think he's trying to shake the pussy label that we unfairly have found bestowed upon him. I know we've talked about this in great depth on the blog, and we've talked about it a few times on the podcast.
Wait a minute, you're bullying him.
Oh, sorry. I think he's coming back a little too soon. I also think that the Bears' defense is susceptible. The Packers, after Aaron Rodgers got hurt, you knew the Packers were going to just run the ball, and Eddie Lacy and James Starks just still gashed the hell out of that Bears defense. With Seneca Wallace at quarterback, and this is Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush and Matt Stafford, I don't think Shea McClellan is going to be laying Matt Stafford into the turf and breaking his collarbone. I mean, it could happen. You never know. But I think the Lions' offense is just going to be too much for the Bears' defense, just like it was in Detroit. When Reggie Bush decided he was going to just become the human highlight reel, like leap over Bear defenders, do, you know, circle, triangle, square, X. He was doing the Madden. He was PlayStation Man that day. It's like you could just literally see the buttons being pressed. And it was something fun to watch. And even though this is in Chicago and on the grass, I still like the Lions to put up enough here to win.
It's on that bad grass, too. I don't know. Something about the changing of the seasons just makes that Soldier Field turf just go to pot. I don't know why that is, but It's going to be on the bad grass. It's going to be emotional with the home crowd welcoming Jay Cutler back. The Bears are going to want revenge for that Detroit loss earlier in the year, and I'm going to go ahead and take the Lions with you. For the exact same reason that you stated, the very first reason off the top, I'm no doctor. I think Jay Cutler is coming back too damn soon. This injury was diagnosed as about a 4-week injury initially, and it's only been a couple of weeks. I get the feeling that Jay Cutler saw that outing that Josh McCown had, those two outings, actually starting with the Washington game where Cutler first got injured, and then continuing with this major upset in Green Bay last Monday night. And Cutler's got the contract hanging over his head, the fact that his contract runs out at the end of the year. And I'm playing dime store psychologist here, but I think Jay Cutler is rushing himself back on the field a little too soon because he doesn't want to be seen as useless or an expenditure that the Bears don't necessarily have to pay. I think he's making himself go out there to prove, hey, you guys still need me. I know we won a game without me at Green Bay and nobody expected it, but I'm still valuable. I'm still important, and I'm going to go back out here for my teammates. I'm going to prove that I can go out here and battle through this pain for my teammates. I'm going to get this injury, put it on the back burner, and I'm going to perform for my teammates, for my people, for my team, for my organization. And he's overlooking one small thing. He's going to be less than mobile and taking on Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley. And they bent him into a pretzel in Detroit when he was healthy and more mobile than he's going to be on Sunday. I don't see this ending very well for Jay Cutler. And it's sad to say because I'm a Cutler fan, and I think I don't think it's close. He's the best quarterback in the history of the Chicago Bears. And I hate to see him rush himself back and put undue pressure on himself, but I think that's exactly what he's doing. I still like it to be a high-scoring game. I think both offenses are humming along. Shea McClellan will not be dumping Matthew Stafford on his shoulder because Shea McClellan somehow got injured and is not going to be playing in this game. And that's going to be a help. That's the one thing McClellan's good for is to rush the passer and injure the guy, and he's not going to be able to do that. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Lions to take control of the division, go to 6-3, and get a road win and pull off the sweep, the season sweep of the Bears. Moving on to our next highlight game of the week will be the Broncos and the Chargers, the Denver Broncos, 7-1, coming off their bye week. Peyton Manning rested up from whatever injuries he had. He had a sprained ankle, I'm sure other body aches from being his age, but he's over all of that, hopefully after the bye week, hopefully for his sake. And San Diego and Phillip Rivers are so up and down, so inconsistent. The 4-4 Chargers need a big home win. The 7-1 Broncos come in rested, and I don't think they're going to give them the home win. Denver is a 7-point favorite on the road at San Diego, and that is a big road number. And I'm still going to take the Denver Broncos because to trust the San Diego defense to hold a rested bye week Denver offense led by Peyton Manning in place, I don't see it. I don't see it happening at all. I'm going back to the sack man numbers a little bit this week, and I'm noticing that San Diego and Denver both protect their quarterbacks very well. The Chargers have only allowed Phillip Rivers to be sacked 12 times, and the Broncos have only allowed Peyton Manning to be sacked 11 times. So light it up. Go with the over, whatever the number is. I think both quarterbacks are going to go back and forth and just light up the sky with big, big passing numbers. But right now, you have to take Peyton Manning in a shootout against any quarterback in the NFL because that's how hot he was, at least before the bye. And I don't see any reason for him to not be so hot after the bye. We talked a little bit about Denver going with a new coach because of the health problems of John Fox. It'll be Jack Del Rio stepping in at the helm. And I think that, as you already pointed out, Jason, Peyton Manning is his own offensive coordinator. It's not going to make much of a difference that John Fox is going to be not on the sideline and Jack Del Rio is going to be there. I don't think the Broncos' offense misses much of a beat at all. And I will take Denver to go ahead and cover that big 7-point number.
Yeah, just so you're aware here, this is one of the highest over-unders I've ever seen in the NFL. 58-point over-under. It's not
enough.
I think you still need to take the over here. It's going to be a fun game. I have San Diego. I literally think it's going to be just video game numbers back and forth all day long. I think they're just going to trade touchdown for touchdown all day back and forth. Phillip Rivers is going to be up for this game. That home crowd is going to be up for this game. Wouldn't be shocked to see San Diego bust out the powder blues for this one. You know, always looks good in those powder blues. You know, it's one of the funkiest looking, unique looking home football uniforms out there. But I just have that weird feeling that they're going to hang really close. That's why I'm taking San Diego. And of course, with that being 7 on the line, you could even make the case that this smells a little pushy. You know, it could. And all you need is 45-38 or some crazy ridiculous high score to come out that way. But I like San Diego here to really fall back into their old ways. They always used to be the contender or one of the contenders. They've been sort of put on the sidelines for stupidest team in football, which we have a new contender for with Miami for not what they do on the field, but for some of their hijinks. But that train wreck on Monday night, that's stupidest team in football 1 and 2 right now. But San Diego for years would invent ways to lose games back when Marty Schottenheimer was there. They found a way to lose a playoff game after they had intercepted Tom Brady and sealed the deal, and then the dude decides instead of just falling down, he's going to try to run the ball back and then fumbles it right back to the Patriots to then go down and kick the game-winning field goal. They would just invent ways to lose. I have a feeling San Diego will have this game in hand and fall back to that old San Diego and find a way somehow inventively to lose this game, but still manage to cover the number. So I do like Denver to win. I have San Diego to cover, and no stats, of course. It's me. I don't have a stat number here for you. Shocking, I know, but I do like the cover on this, and I'm with you. I love the over.
Yeah, I'll give some stats for you since you're asking for it. We got two teams that are averaging 8.4 and 8.7 yards per pass attempt. San Diego at 8.4, Denver at 8.7. If you need any more impetus, folks, I'm telling you, bet that over. Speaking of video game highlight-looking games, Sunday night. Looks like that should be more of the same. Dallas and New Orleans. Again, a couple of great passing teams. They're both in the top 10 in passing yards per game. Dallas Cowboys are a 6.5-point underdog at New Orleans. Can't see this game going under either. Got to love the over for this one. But as far as the pick itself, Dallas 1-3 on the road. New Orleans 4-0 at home. Doesn't look good for the Cowboys. Jason, which way are you going on this one?
I'm taking the Saints here. I think they're a little sore in the hinder after the horrible game they played against the Jets. I know I had the Jets last week, but I didn't have that. I mean, it still counts as a win. Did not see the disaster for the Saints coming like that happened. I think I'm also just taking the Saints as an anti-Cowboys pick because I know that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are just going to slurp the Cowboys like they always do. Any NFC East team that gets on Sunday Night Football, and they're on their knees. I mean, they are just assuming the position and just going to town. It's really ugly to watch. I might have to watch that one on mute because I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's East Coast bias or just familiarity, but, man, they just completely fillet those NFC East teams on Sunday Night Football. They love it.
You are a bad man for putting that image in my head, man. You're a bad guy.
Yeah, you just got that image in your head of Michaels and Collinsworth down there just double teaming Romo. And, you know. Sorry.
God.
So yeah, just for that reason, I'm taking the Saints. We'll have to find this. We'll have to put this one on the highlight reel for the end of the season.
Are
you going to say anything for the rest? Oh, I thought you weren't going to say anything for the rest of the show. I was waiting to just hear you like throwing up, you know, in the background.
Yes, I was dry heaving. I was over here in the corner just looking for a bucket. I'm going to take Dallas to cover that number. It's a big number for New Orleans defense. You know how I feel about New Orleans defense. I've been on them all year. I don't think they're all that improved. It's even borne out by the numbers. They're still giving up 4.9 yards per rush. They're still giving up 7 yards per pass attempt. I still don't believe in New Orleans in the long term. And for this game specifically, I actually think they can win the game because it's going to be so high scoring that I don't think it's prudent to pick one team over the other straight up. I think it's going to be that close. It's just whoever gets the last touchdown wins. And New Orleans might get the last touchdown, but I don't think that's going to give them a win by 7 points or more, maybe by 3 or 4 or something in that range. Both teams are pretty beat up, actually, on both sides of the ball. So that's another thing that's going to make this a little tricky. You know, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in taking Dallas with the points, but you should get informed on the injuries before you make a decision on this game. Because Dallas might not have one of their best defensive linemen in Hatcher. I didn't write his first name down, but DeMarcus Ware should come back. And then New Orleans has all sorts of issues with some of their pass catchers. Marcus Colston, Jimmy Graham are both questionable. Darren Sproles got concussed last week, but it looks like he's going to come back and play. So this might be one of those that comes down to who can put the most playmakers on the field instead of on the sideline. And if something changes in the pregame for that, maybe that'll change a pick somewhere along the way. But I think I'm going to stick with Dallas to cover such a big number in that situation.
Yeah, we haven't had a premature whistle there. You're getting a little excited.
Start on
thinking
me.
About Mike. You stop thinking about Michaels and Collinsworth. All right, get your act together.
Oh, stop it!
Now you made me lose what I was going to say. Oh, well, I guess we've got 10 games left. Now I totally forgot what I was going to say about that. Dallas. This is what happens when all of my notes are on a little magnetic fridge pad with kitty cats on them. I don't have a lot of stuff written down here, so this is all coming out of my brain. It's really sad. Blow the whistle again here. All right, those were the regular picks. Those were our in-depth picks. Now it's time, Andre, you're going to start us off for the rest of the picks in much less detail.
We will start with Cincinnati and Baltimore. The Bengals are a one-point road favorite at Baltimore. Baltimore has been all sorts of disappointing this year. Cincinnati, 6-3, looking to take control of that division. Jason and I will both take the Bengals to put their foot on the throat of the Ravens and take control of the AFC North. I don't think I can go with Baltimore until they figure out what's going on with their running game, because Ray Rice and Bernard Pierce have both been just horrible. So you cannot go with the Ravens right now.
Well, the Green Bay Packers are 1-point home favorite this week against the Philadelphia Eagles. And Nick Foles, after his 7-touchdown performance last week against the Raiders, we both like the Philadelphia Eagles. Sorry, Green Bay fans, you know, all a couple of them who may happen to listen to this show. I know I'm letting you down, but, yeah, Seneca Wallace, 6-15 lifetime record, a little too much for the Packers this week. We're both taking the Eagles.
Seattle -4 at Atlanta. We definitely see this one differently. Jason's got Seattle in a high-scoring affair to knock off those Falcons. He thinks the Seattle defense is going to get off the field and set up their offense in good field position with all of Atlanta's offensive woes and all their problems, they will not be able to keep up with the Seattle scoring. And I have Atlanta to cover the 4-point number, but not necessarily to win in a low-scoring affair. I don't trust Seattle's offense on the road the way they've been playing. And I'll take Atlanta to bow up and get a little bit of momentum going off of that embarrassment from last week.
New York Giants are 7-point home favorite this week, and Andre is going to take them. He's going to give all those points. The Giants are coming off of the bye. Figures Oakland, after all of that offense, that offensive explosion they gave up last week against the Philadelphia Eagles, are not going to travel well to the East Coast. And for all those reasons going the opposite way, I'm going to take the Oakland Raiders. This is one of my it-makes-no-sense kind of picks. I just don't think the Giants are good enough to beat anybody by 7 points right now. That is an awful, awful team. And again, with a win, and Dallas loses, or if the Philadelphia Eagles somehow miraculously find a way to lose to Seneca Wallace, I mean, this division, it's just a complete train wreck. But we differ on this one. I have Oakland. Andre has the Giants.
We don't see how Jacksonville can beat anybody or cover a spread right now. There's a huge spread. They're 13-point underdogs at the Tennessee Titans, and we both are going to have to take the Titans. How sad are the Jacksonville Jaguars? There's just no reason to take them right now. I considered it. They're coming off a bye. You'd think they might get something together in the bye week and figure out some new tricks, some new trick plays or something, but it's still the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Jason, of course, points out even their best player, Justin Blackmon, decided to take a powder and maybe take some powder, whatever illicit drug he might have taken. But Justin Blackman's gone, suspended. Jacksonville might not win or cover a spread the rest of the year.
You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars are so bad, I'm surprised that whole team isn't trying to get busted for taking some kind of drugs. Just saying.
They might be working on it right now.
Tip, guys, pro tip, drugs will get that make – drugs will take your pain away. I hope there's no kids listening to this. Pittsburgh Steelers, a 3.5-point home favorite this week against the Buffalo Bills. Andre and I are both back on that Buffalo Bills bandwagon. If it was just Andre alone, of course, take the Steelers. But we're both on it this week for sure. E.J. Manuel is back. Pittsburgh, horrible, horrible offensive line. Buffalo, if their defense is good at anything, it is getting after the quarterback. So that's a recipe for disaster in Pittsburgh. Take the Bills.
We both recognize a possible budding star in St. Louis in that running back, Zach Stacy. Neither one of us had seen him play before his Monday night performance against Seattle. So we both want to keep an eye on Zach Stacy, the Zach Stacy show, as we call it, and we're both going against him on the field, at least his team. St. Louis plus 9.5 in Indianapolis. Jason says despite Indy's tension to play from behind and let Andrew Luck lead him to comeback victories, he's going to go ahead and take Indianapolis anyway, and I concur. Just too big of a talent differential between these two teams on the field, so we will both take the Colts and give the 9.5.
Now the Carolina Panthers are going to try to step up in class this week at San Francisco. It's a 5.5-point home favorite this week. We don't see that happening. We like the Niners to give Carolina a big, heaping, steaming dose of reality this week. San Francisco's coming off the bye week. Two running quarterbacks. Andre, you especially think that Kaepernick is going to just wear out the Carolina Panther defense. And by the end of that game, they're just going to start getting gashed. It's going to be too much Kaepernick, too much Frank Gore. It's going to control the clock, run up that score. I see it the same way. I actually don't think this game is going to even be close. I like San Francisco huge over the Carolina Panthers, who may be exposed as slightly fraudulent.
Two teams hard to figure out, the Houston Texans trying to go back to their Houston Toxins ways. Houston plus 3 at the Arizona Cardinals, and I'm going to go with Interception Santa one more time. Give me the Cardinals minus 3. I like their defense to take advantage of the young Case Keenum, full of vim and vigor and everything, spit and fire and all that you could imagine against the Colts, at least for one half, and then everything went down the toilet. So I will go ahead and take the Arizona Cardinals. I also like Andre Ellington going into the Darren Sproles role at running back for Arizona. They'll be hammering it with Rashard Mendenhall, and then they'll send Ellington out as sort of the swing back out of the backfield, and I'd like Arizona to take advantage by doing that. Jason's going to go with the Houston Texans. He says Santa will deliver some presence to a still decent Houston defense, and he's even calling his shot. He says Carson Palmer this week, 4 INTs. Write that shit down.
Ho, 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 here's a pick for you, what a pick for you. Well, we're tight on time tonight. This is good. I mean, not tight in a bad way, but this is probably the tightest 30-minute show we've had. We're not getting cut off in the middle.
We're actually getting all our picks in under 30 minutes, which is shocking.
Yeah, before I get into that pick, I apologize, folks, if you listen to our show. We didn't know, if you're listening live, that it just cuts us off right at 30 minutes. So we do tend to ramble on. So some of those picks, I know they're on the blog, but, yeah, we finally realized after somebody who listened to the show live explained to us, yeah, you're getting cut off hard at 30 minutes. And then we found out a couple shows ago, we also get cut off hard at 45 minutes of the VIP after show. I think I'm just delaying this pick more than anything. The Miami Dolphins. Ooh, if you got the music, fire it up. If you don't, that's okay. All right, 1 point. Got it?
Go ahead.
Okay, Miami Dolphins are a 1-point road dog at the winless Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Never more on this show has that music been more appropriate than for this game. I'm tuning in for Gruden and Tirico. They are going to just be loving this one.
No, don't say it. Don't say it.
No, I'm not going to. They're not going to do a Michaels and Collinsworth double team on Ryan Tannehill. We both love the Tampa Bay Buccaneers here. Wow, we're taking Chiano ball. We love Tampa Bay. Miami, we're kind of under the radar. Their offensive line, even before all this Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito stuff, was awful. They were giving up sacks and bunches on Ryan Tannehill, and now two of their best offensive linemen are gone. Tampa has played tough with Mike Glennon. We haven't made fun of him, and I'm not going to make fun of him for this one. We both like Tampa to beat the Clown College in Miami right now. They're both Clown Colleges. Who's the best team in Florida? Florida State?
Yes. I believe the Seminoles would beat all three of these teams right now. You got to root against Miami as far as I'm concerned with all the stuff that's been going on. Quite frankly, I hope Tampa Bay runs a train on Miami and comes in their cunt. You can listen to this show on iTunes. As I said, you can just subscribe to the show on iTunes if you like some of that humor and Rudy repartee. All our picks are already up on the blog right now for week 10. You can find that blog at inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. You can email the show with your comments and questions and whatever else you might want to say. That would be inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com for that. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre, and Jason's at IMLDJTG. And, of course, our show page, where you're listening live right now. Our show page, of course, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, where you can listen to this stuff happen live and even call into the show maybe down the road, Wednesday night perhaps, for when we recap the games in even more or less detail. And that number for calling in would be 646-595-4534. So we are out of here for the live portion of our show, and we're actually out of here under 30 minutes. Had to hit the whistle one more time in celebration of that. I'm Dre, he's Jay. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. And we'll see you on the other side of this music for those of you subscribing and listening to the archive to hear our conversation continue for at least another 15 minutes. Jason, I'm still not completely getting the hang of this. I keep playing the outro music after the 30-minute mark, which means nobody listening live is hearing that. So
that's okay, though. It's a good intro into the VIP after show here. Now, please explain your graphic reference right there at the end of the show, because that wasn't coming from your heart. That was actually coming from an unnamed source, my favorite source, by the way.
Of course. Yes, it's coming from the latest release issued by Jonathan Martin's people, who say that the Richie Incognito bullying was only part of the bullying / hazing that was going on in the Miami locker room. Jonathan Martin's saying that somebody, some unnamed teammate other than Richie Incognito, somewhere along the way told Jonathan Martin that he would like to fuck his sister raw and run a train on her because she loves him, and that he was going to fuck her without a condom and come down her cunt. And as classy as that is, I don't know where exactly that comes from.
Thank God you quoted that, by the way. Ooh, get that good.
Yeah, that wasn't me.
What's it label back?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, what can I say? I should have warned you before I used that such salty language, I suppose. But if you've listened to the show before, you know that we use all sorts of language, so it really kind of doesn't matter anyway.
So that's a direct quote.
That is not my words. That is what Jonathan Martin claimed somebody said about his sister, which I don't know exactly how that's supposed to motivate somebody or make them a better teammate or what have you. But that's what he claims was said to him. So that's where that came from. That wasn't me.
Wow.
Yeah, I finally got my thoughts together about the whole Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito situation, and I actually got them laid out here in front of me in note form. But because I'm not a talk show host professionally, because I've never done this, I think I'm going to wind up stumbling and bumbling through this if I try to read just from the notes. So I'm going to see if I can try to mix this along with my real feelings about it, and hopefully I can get all of this in before 15 minutes runs out, because I don't want to bogart the whole show here. But I was reluctant to sort of speak out before because I'm really sensitive about not being in the football culture, never being in a locker room in my life, never playing any sort of organized sport like that. Because when some of these guys use the excuse, well, you don't know what's going on in the locker room, you've never been in there, and you don't know anything that's going on, I mean, as much of a dumb excuse as I think it is, it's true. I can't argue with it. I haven't been in the locker room. I don't know what it's like. However, this isn't really to me about being in a football locker room. This is about treating humans with a decent, you know, with a baseline of decency. And it's not even about the words necessarily to Jonathan Martin. What it's more about to me is who the words were directed to. And what I mean by that is, in no way is Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito such a close pair, from all that I've read, that Incognito should ever have felt comfortable enough to say something like that to Jonathan Martin. Not just in a locker room, but in any form of camaraderie, whether it's in an office or at school or anywhere, or just a regular old friendship. some people say things like what Richie Incognito said to their friends. And it's okay because the friend says it's okay. The friend goes ahead and forgives or understands where it's coming from and says, well, that's just, you know, joking. He doesn't really mean that he wants to run train on my sister. He's just busting my balls. Or he doesn't really mean that, you know, calling me a half N-word and threatening to kill me. He clearly doesn't mean any of that. It's just coming from a different place. But at no time in their relationship did Richie Incognito become that close with Jonathan Martin where he could say something like that. It's about the basic decency to know that this person is not somebody you can say that to. If you said something like that to other guys before and got away with it for whatever reason, that's fine. But that does not give you the right to go say that to anybody out there just because they happen to be in your locker room. It's not about your rights to say something like that to somebody else. It's about you being such a lunkhead that you can't figure out that this person, this intelligent, quiet, shy, whatever you want to call him, person, is not somebody to say something like that to. It's like running a prank on somebody. You can't prank everybody in the world. Some people take pranks okay. Some people don't. And you know the difference. You know the basic difference between who's okay to run a prank on and who it's not. Some people you can't do certain things to because they're different. And that's really the whole point. That's what it all gets down to me, is they seem to treat Jonathan Martin differently in the Miami locker room because he was, quote-unquote, different, because he was educated, because his parents were intelligent, they're lawyers, because he didn't come from a poverty background, because he actually, you know, grew up with a little class and money. His nickname was Big Weirdo in the locker room. And what that tells me, as someone who's also big and a weirdo, is they just treated him differently because he wasn't one of them. He wasn't an animal like them. He wasn't quite on that same level, so therefore they figured it was okay to bully him around in the name of toughening him up, quote-unquote. There's nothing – and the toughening up thing comes from trying to make him specific, you know, a better football player. That's why he needs to be toughened up, because he's potentially hurting the football team by not being tough enough. Okay, well, fine. Let's go on that flawed method or thought process that this toughens him up somehow. Exactly what about calling him a half N-word and threatening to kill him on a voicemail is toughening him up and making him play football better? What part of that do you think he takes out to the football field and makes him play better against another NFL team because Richie Incognito left such a vulgar voicemail for him? Exactly how does that help him play football better? So it's not about making him a better football player. It's not about toughening him up. It's about the fact that he was different. And we have to treat people different. The people who aren't just like us, we have to treat them differently. We have to give them a different set of rules and treat them in a different manner because they're different from us and we don't understand them. And that's why I hated so much about that, is that you don't have to treat him different just because he's smarter than you, just because he's got more class than you, just because he's got more money than you. You know, the whole culture of football is so jacked up. You know, think about how guys like, you know, Warren Sapp and Randy Moss dropping past drafts because marijuana is so bad, but then, you know, you can still take high in the first round people who beat women like Lawrence Phillips, people who shit in women's closets like Najee Davenport. You can still take guys like Richie Incognito, who had a history of being a complete asshole from college, from high school even, all the way up to now, and his dad apparently is no better than that. I just hate the whole culture of the NFL in that respect, that they seem to take animals and act like that we have to give them chances, second chances, third chances, fourth chances, because you'd rather have an animal on your team than a good guy who might not be seen as tough enough. We have to show him tough love. We have to toughen up a fellow brother and show him tough love. And it's just joking. It's just harmless in their mind because we're just showing him tough love. It's not tough love. This is about what we want football players to be, not what they really are. Because we want all football players to be gladiators. We want them to be warriors. We want them to be animals. That's why we accept that culture and we accept this behavior. And that's why so many guys have been out there defending Richie Incognito. So many NFL players and, of course, so many callers on Sports Talk Radio because they fancy themselves as tough guys too. So that's what that's all about. It's just we want to see them as something greater than us. We want to see them as something tougher than us, and therefore we accept this behavior and this kind of culture, and I don't think it's acceptable. And the last thing I want to say about that is I figure Richie Incognito is not going to be let back into the Miami locker room. He might find his way into some other locker room somewhere down the road because he can play football and because he's a quote-unquote tough guy. So I don't really care about him, whether he gets back in. But if someone gives Jonathan Martin a chance to get back into a locker room, to get back into an NFL locker room, hopefully it'll be the Dolphins, but if not, maybe somewhere else. I hope Jonathan Martin gives some version of this speech, this one- or two-line speech, if he ever gets back in front of a locker room. Okay, I'm back, and I want to put the past in the past. Everything's behind me. You know, what happened, happened, and we're just going to move forward. But we're going to move forward with this caveat. I'm a happy person. I'm not like all of you, but I'm still a happy person. I might not be as tough as you. I might not be as much of a warrior or a gangster or a thug as all of you guys in here. But guess what? I'm me, and I'm happy with that. And you're going to respect that I'm happy about that, and you're not going to do things and say things to me to, quote-unquote, toughen me up. You're going to respect that I am who I am, just like I have to respect that all of you are who you are, and that's that. And anybody who wants to try to challenge that, what's going to happen is you're going to watch me still be happy, and I'm going to go to my lawyer, and I'm going to get you kicked out of the fucking league, just like Richie Incognito. Thank you, and good day.
Wow. There you go. That and now you have the rest of the story. You forgot to do your you forgot to do that one.
My Walter Cronkite sign off or whatever that was.
Oh God. That was
Morrow. Was his name Edward Morrow?
No. That was what's his name? Paul Harvey.
And now one of those old guys.
The rest of the story. Yeah. first of all, no. Yes, you're correct on all that. We've been friends for 31 years now, and I don't think we even have the familiarity where you could say that about my sister, and I'd be okay with it, even in joking manner. Just so you know, for future reference. Known you since 1982, but yeah, please don't say that about my sister or any female that I have close familiar relations with. That would be disgusting, first of all, for you to say that, but please don't. So I cannot imagine what it would be like to have that said to me at work. you know, because they're at work. Those guys are working. That's their job. And somebody at the job came up to him and said that he wants to do those things with his sister. Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly. I think I might be calling HR or somebody like that. No, a lot of these guys are just overgrown children. They never grew up. Yes, there's an identity problem in the NFL because you have this warrior mentality and this bro mentality, and then they'll pair these guys out and trot these guys out in front of kids as role models, or you go and talk to them at schools. And have them on the commercials driving the little kids on the bus, but in the meantime, they're talking about racism and doing awful things to each other's family members and all the things they do off the field that are, you know, murderers. And that does tend to draw in some unsavory elements. And now I think we're just seeing. And I think what the NFL is afraid of is that we're just seeing a little bit of it, just the tip of the iceberg with this.
Yes,
so I think they want this to go away.
You're right. This is just the beginning. There's so much of this that goes on. You're absolutely right about that.
This is like the guy who had to go hide in Russia because he's leaking all the government secrets slowly. Jonathan Martin's that guy now. He's going to have to go live in Russia.
Oh, man.